Earlier this month, the nonpartisan Legislative Analyst's Office released a report warning that California could continue to face multi-billion dollar budget deficits for years to come. It projects that the state will face an immediate $20.7 billion deficit in the upcoming 2010 to 2011 fiscal year. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has until January 10th to present a new spending plan to contend with the continued fiscal woes. Legislative analyst Mac Taylor urged the governor and state lawmakers to begin working on solutions as soon as possible and cautioned that if no permanent fixes are found, California will face budget deficits of at least $20 billion annually through 2015. The harrowing projections come just 4 months after an overdue budget was signed by Schwarzenegger on July 28th that attempted to address the state's $24 billion budget shortfall for this year. Deep cuts were made in education, healthcare, and important social services, and similar slashes may be in store for next summer. Unrest over the burdens imposed by this year's budget have already visibly erupted as University of California campuses across the state became sites of protests and arrests last week over the recent 32% raise in student fees. The continuing crisis has led some to deem California as the first failed state in the union. In a short radio documentary, Uprising intern and Cal State Northridge undergraduate Steve Gill characterizes the situation as the end of California as he traces the effects of the budget cuts on students, teachers, and families while analyzing the roots of the crisis.
2009 was the year that California's social safety net was decimated. Health and Human Services were slashed $527 million, public education was cut $9 billion, and elderly renters were made to absorb a $91 million cut to housing tax credits. Meanwhile, California remains the only major oil-producing state that does not tax its oil companies. But don't take my word for it.
First and foremost, this budget does not raise your taxes. We don't look to the taxpayers or businesses to foot the bill for Sacramento's appetite for spending. The majority of solutions come from deep spending cuts, and they come from three areas, which is healthcare, education, and prisons.
As he approved of the most overdue budget in state history, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger had this to say.
Now, we all know that the negotiations were tough, and it took a little bit longer than expected. But the fact of the matter is that I am very proud of this budget.
The international TV network Al Jazeera even covered this state's budget crisis in a two-part program called California, Failed State.
On this episode of Fault Lines, California crashing. A massive budget crisis in the richest state in the U.S. The solution on the table? Slash social services for the poor.
It will be a catastrophe, the likes of which will be visited on every community in California.
So while legislators were celebrating the passage of a budget that does not raise taxes, mothers scrambled to get their children health care after it was threatened to be cut, students scrambled to sign up for classes before they filled up, teachers scrambled to find jobs before they were cut, workers scrambled to get hours before they were cut, the elderly realized that their voting power was just not enough anymore, and the homeless, well, at least they made new friends as more people continued to lose their homes. Is this the end of California? I'm Steve Gill, a student at California State University, Northridge. This is the story of one of the most progressive states in the union and its fall from grace. The sudden cuts in social services this summer left many people wondering how such draconian cuts could have been made. To make matters worse, there was a lack of explanation from California's leadership as to how these cuts came about, making it harder for people to formulate responses. I went to one of my professors and asked him if he could explain what is happening in California.
Tom Hoganesh, Associate Professor of Political Science, Cal State Northridge. Well, I mean, government, it's not just California that has a budget crisis. It's the United States has a budget crisis. Europe has a budget crisis. Individual states, I mean, we all have budget crises. And the reason is that the way that we fund our government is tied to the capitalist system. It's tied to the economic cycles. And so if, for instance, tax revenue is going down because the economy is going down, you're going to have these kinds of cycles. So the real question is not can you ever avoid situations like this entirely, but what can you do to sort of moderate these cycles? Budget crisis in California is nothing new. I mean, we've had severe budget crises in the past. Back in the early 1990s, we had a terrible budget crisis following the recession and the decline of the defense industry in Southern California and the collapse of the housing market. We've had other booms and busts in the budget. When the dot-com busted in 2002, we had another budget crisis. This budget crisis is just an extension of really that pattern in California, that sometimes when the economy is going really well, we have a lot of money in the state coffers, and then when the economic situation is turning downward, we have a budget deficit. It just so happens that this economic downturn is just much worse than anything that we've seen since the 1930s.
Kokai Kwajatahiri is an organizer with Californians for Accountable Leadership, as well as with the Community Coalition of South Los Angeles. In response to the budget cuts, he is calling for the impeachment of Governor Schwarzenegger.
I would like to take people back a little bit, that what Governor Schwarzenegger is doing is what he promised he would do when he was elected in a recall election in 2003, the slash the safety net, and particularly targeting those programs that service and impact those who can least afford to have those cuts, right? The most vulnerable in our society, the poor, the disabled, seniors, and children. And so what he's doing is carrying out that program. But in addition to making the cuts illegal or otherwise to these needed programs, we feel like he's also literally basically not done his job and has been very ineffective in terms of his leadership in the state of California. If you remember in July, just a few months ago, he literally sat on his in his office and basically said to the state legislature, "You know what? I know you don't have veto power. You can't override my veto. So basically, I'm going to sit in my office and I'm going to force you to cut and burn programs that many of you have fought for." And people need to understand that because we don't have a 2/3, right, which is a whole other subject, right, he basically has the power to do that. And so what we're saying is this, is as governor of the state of California, he has the primary responsibility for taking care of the people of California. And millions of people are struggling in life and death situations because of the decision-making and the political philosophy of the governor.
I wonder if Governor Schwarzenegger has an answer for Kukai.
I know that college students will pay now higher tuitions. I know that teachers will be laid off. And I know that our state workers will get less money. But we have to do that. It's the only way to solve the problem and to save our great state.
I wonder if Mr. Schwarzenegger truly believes this is the only way to solve the problem. Let us look at a couple of stories that illustrate what Schwarzenegger's solution means for some of us. At the beginning of the 2009 academic school year, students and professors at Cal State Northridge held an event called Vent at the Tent. Here's what the CSUN community had to share.
I'm Professor Michael Hogan. I'm an associate professor in the Cinema and Television Arts Department. I teach filmmaking production.
Has this budget cuts personally affected you?
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell us how?
I may lose my house. So unless the bank will renegotiate with me, I'm in a bit of a fix.
I'm Teresa Montaño. I'm an associate professor of Chicano Studies here at Cal State Northridge, and I'm also the California Faculty Association chapter president here at CSUN. We've had three students so far come to the tent and tell us that they've gone to a number of classes to try to get in, and if they're not able to get their classes, they face deportation. So it's not just a question of, if I don't get this class, I can go out and do, you know, get a job somewhere. They don't get these classes, they get deported. I've had teachers come in and say to me, I really need this class. If I don't get this class, I lose my job because I have to have a certain number of units in order to keep my position.
I'm a gender and women's studies professor. We work for social justice and peace, and I think students deserve something much better than what they're getting, and faculty too. I think we're people too. We also have to pay our bills. As for my own personal story too, I cannot pay my bills anymore. I also have a 23-year-old daughter whose health insurance runs out when you turn 23. She has a precondition, so I have to pay $500 a month now for her insurance. She's unemployed, and I have a wage cut, which means that I, as a faculty, as a professor, PhD from an Ivy League institution, I cannot afford food because after I paid my bills, I don't have anything left over. So, you know, I share the same stories with my students. You know, we are really deeply affected by this crisis.
And how do you see the future of California and the California State University system if these budget cuts continue?
Well, what I see is a dismantling from public education. That I've been seeing this and following it for a long time, but this is a very aggressive move that has been done, you know, to really dismantle public education. The season will not be able, or the CSU will not be able to continue with these furloughs. I hear that it will not only be this year, but we should expect at least another year of the same. That's enough to really liquidate, you know, what there is left of public education. And as for the future of California, you know, everybody knows that a economy with an uneducated labor force is programmed for failure. And this economy is already a failure. We know that, but then we have no future. And we are sacrificing a whole generation, you know, that is supposed to take over the economy, and it will not be prepared. And we also know that education is not only to get a job and, you know, become a piece in the economy. We educate people to become citizens in a democracy and to become conscientious beings. And we are not given, we don't even have the time for that anymore. We are all really in, I would say, really in economic and social despair, faculty and students. So we should unite. We're all in the same boat here.
Hey, can you tell me your name and your position again?
My name is Brandy Mendoza. I am an associate professor of gender and women's studies.
Thank you.
And I also come from Honduras, where we just had a coup, and I tell my students, I saw millions of dollars pouring into my country to support a military civilian regime. Bring those billions of dollars to California. Hondurans will be very thankful.
Samba la cosa, que viva la astronomía. Caramba y samba la cosa, que viva la astronomía. Me gustan los estudiantes que rugen como los vientos cuando le meten al oído sotanas y regimientos. Pajarillos libertarios igual que los elementos. Caramba y samba la cosa, que viva lo experimento. Caramba y zamba la cosa, que viva lo experimento. Me gustan los estudiantes porque levantan el pecho cuando le dicen harina, sabiendo se que es aprecho. Y no se hacen sordomudos cuando se presenta el hecho. Caramba y zamba la cosa, el código del derecho. Caramba y zamba la cosa, el código del derecho.
I also spoke with a constituency that at times seems to disappear in the city, the bus rider. Barbara Lott Holland is co-chair of the Bus Riders Union. She tells me how bus riders have been affected by the budget cuts.
My name is Barbara Lott Holland. I am co-chair of the Bus Riders Union.
Have any members of your community or the community that you serve been affected by the recent California budget cuts?
All of our members have. Our members are primarily the poor, black and Latinos and Asian Pacific Islanders is what constitute our membership. They are, the majority of them are transit dependent. Over 60% of those are women and children, and they are very much affected by this. The average household yearly budget, the annual income of our members is like $12,000 a year. So any budget cuts definitely affect them. the majority of our members do rely on what few remaining social services that we have. A lot of our members can't meet meetings now because rather than get a monthly pass, they only travel on the bus when they need to, because that monthly pass now has to go for other things. So it's cut. That alone has cut down on their activities. They are now confined to their home or within walking distance of their neighborhood because they can't find that.
I'm Steve Gill, and you're listening to a special report called The Ends of California. Jeanette Ali, a resident of South L.A. and a Medi-Cal recipient who is currently caring for her cancer-stricken husband, shares her personal story of the effects of the budget cuts.
When my husband, it started about 2 years ago, and they found out that he had cancer. And so we started receiving IHSS and also a nurse to come out and help us with the services that we needed at home. But since the budget cuts have come into play, whereas the nurse was coming 5 days a week, she has 60 days where she's only allowed to come in for 15 hours within those 60 days. That is a huge dilemma for me as well as my husband, because she provided us with so much mental support, physical support. And without those services, my husband needs shots every day that he needs to take every day. He needs shots that he takes every other day. And without those services, he's not getting his shots, because we need that motivation from the nurse who provide us those services. And without those services, I don't feel that he should lose his life because of the cuts that the governor has presented. I just have so many concerns about that, because without those services, he could lose his life.
I wanted to explore deeper how we got to this point. This state that we so proudly tout as the seventh largest economy in the world seems to be crumbling under the weight of the budget cuts. How do we allow this to happen? For answers that are not so immediately evident to us, I turn to the California Budget Project, or CBP, which is a nonprofit research and public education organization that addresses our state fiscal policy. Scott Graves is a senior policy analyst for the CBP. He provided me with some very valuable information regarding our state's fiscal policy.
Let me give you a couple of important factors here that have led to the current crisis. First, over the last 15 years, state policymakers have approved a range of tax cuts that now cost the state about $12 billion per year. That's every year when you add up the cost of the tax cuts that have been made since the early 1990s, that results in $12 billion less coming to the state treasury to support programs and services. We've also seen rapid growth in the prison budget. The state spending on corrections takes up twice as much of the state budget today as it did 20 years ago. So prison spending has gone up, crowding out funds available for other programs and services. A couple of solutions we see. One is we need to rescind corporate tax cuts that have been made in the last couple of years. We have a saying here at the Budget Project: when you're in a hole, stop digging. A lot of Californians are unaware that some of the most recent budget agreements have included big corporate tax breaks that are going to cost the state up to $2.5 billion every year permanently when they're fully implemented in a couple of years. These tax cuts were made even as legislators were grappling with huge budget deficits, and they were slipped into the budget agreements at the last minute without any public hearings. So we feel that, you know, obviously $2.5 billion is a significant amount of money, and that's money that we won't have to go for schools, universities, health care for children if the state keeps these tax cuts in place. So we think the first place to look is to undo a bad policy idea of the last couple of years, which was granting more tax cuts to major multinational corporations that certainly do not need them.
That is huge. That is something that I, in 2004, when I tried to do that, only dreamt of getting done. And as you know, there was tremendous resistance then because our revenues were coming up and because our economy was coming back. But now, because, and this is why I always say that when there's a crisis, there are opportunities. And so we used that opportunity, and this was the only way we got those reforms done.
So maybe our state problems are not the result of budget cuts, but of tax cuts. The government says it's improving our lives by granting tax cuts to the largest corporations. These cuts let said companies keep more of their own money while the state becomes increasingly starved for revenue. It is during times of crisis that such so-called solutions are offered up. Cut the people's safety net while granting even more tax cuts to the corporations. Our governor used the budget crunch to put in place a conservative tax policy. This is the thesis of analyst and writer Naomi Klein, who in her book, The Shock Doctrine, lays out how those in power use the chaos of a crisis to force changes that benefit them. In a 2007 speech, she quoted the late conservative economist Milton Friedman to expose these tactics.
Friedman wrote this in 1982. He said, "Only a crisis, actual or perceived, produces real change. When that crisis occurs, the actions that are taken depend on the ideas that are lying around. That, I believe, is our basic function, to develop alternatives to existing policies, to keep them alive and available until the politically impossible becomes politically inevitable." That there is the manifesto of what I call disaster capitalism, the taking advantage of a moment of crisis, of extreme cataclysmic change, of confusion, and using it to loot the public sphere.
Perhaps the governor is grateful for the crisis.
And this is why I always say that when there's a crisis, there are opportunities.
Some people point to real remedies for avoiding such a crisis in the future.
We also think at the budget project that it's important to look at long-term causes of the state's budget crisis, and that is that even when the state's economy is strong, California has budget problems. Now, that's partly because our tax system is outdated. It dates back to the 1930s when the state's economy was based more on the sale of goods than it is now. Now we have a service-based economy, and our tax system, especially the sales tax, which provides a lot of revenue for the state, hasn't been updated to reflect this change from a goods-based economy to a service-based economy. So that means that even in good times, even when the economy is strong, our tax system isn't bringing in enough revenue to support programs and services that Californians expect, including K-12 education, higher education, health and human services. So that's one major long-term cause, that our tax system is outdated. And I'd just like to mention one last issue, which is that California is the only state in the nation that requires a supermajority, two-thirds vote, to get a budget out of the legislature and to pass any tax increase in the legislature. This requirement results in chronic budget gridlock and undermines our policymakers' ability to achieve a real and lasting budget solution.
So, you know, if you're looking for one thing that could be easily fixed and would help the revenue side of California's budget problems, it would be to drop down that two-thirds requirement, down to something more like what other democracies use, which is a majority.
In a manner that conjures images of shock therapy described by Naomi Klein, Governor Schwarzenegger seems grateful that the crisis hit. The largest economy in the United States has fallen victim to the global economic crisis. The year is almost over, but as Californians brace themselves for the signing of next year's budget, our future looks bleak. The complete slash to the safety net that was enacted has led Al Jazeera to describe California as our nation's first failed state. In a way, we have allowed this to happen. How much more will we take?
You've been listening to a special report by Steve Gill, intern for Uprising and an undergraduate student at Cal State Northridge.